To the Trickway. I'm Trev. This is Gray. We're back for one last Prodigy review. Bittersweet, no. Kind of a little bit. I know. I didn't think we'd get as many episodes out of this. It's just the way it worked out with, you know, two-parters, three-parters, whatever. Otherwise, it would have probably been done in less episodes. But nevertheless, I tried to find the perfect way to actually split it up for a season. We couldn't have done it justice doing one review for the whole season, because it would have been at least a couple hours long, and it wouldn't have done justice for a lot of the stuff. So
yeah.
I'm kind of glad we've done it this way, to be honest with you. And I looked online.
Plus you got the binging thing, so.
Other people seem to be doing similar. But maybe they'll do it four or five episodes in one podcast, which is fine, but yeah. So it's the finale, the two-parter. It's another two-parter. We saved that to the end specifically because we wanted to. Really quickly getting the paperwork out the way, please join us along in our Discord at discord.gg/extremegamingpodcast. That's where you can find the place to talk to us about Star Trek. We got a Star Trek channel in there. We got a channel there for Gray's entertainment podcast that he does every month called Gray's Green Room. The Discord is basically themed in general around gaming, hence the title. And you can talk to us about gaming and other shenanigans in there. We do a gaming podcast once a week as well. With that, we will crack on. This is episode 19 and 20, so it was a two-parter. And it's called Ouroboros Parts 1 and 2. That's most likely not how you pronounce that. Ouroboros.
Yeah, I think it's Ouroboros. It means something, but I don't remember.
It's something to do with some... Is it an atmospheric thing? Is it something to do... Is it not the Northern Lights? It's Northern Lights.
No, Northern Lights is Ouroboros.
The Ouroboros. It's in that same... weather, space weathery effect things. That's the technical explanation for it.
I'll do a quick look.
He's going to Google it. Man, how boring and dull is
that? Okay, here we go. We're totally wrong. A circular symbol that depicts a snake or dragon devouring its own tail, and that is used especially to represent the eternal cycle of destruction and rebirth.
Wow. Okay. How disappointing.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's what it is, apparently.
There you go. You heard it
pretty much the serpent, the serpent type of thingy. Whatever.
You heard it from the horse's mouth, the grey's mouth. There you go. Right, anyway, so the way we left it off last time, it was looking like World War III was about to kick. In fact, we know World War III has kicked off in Star Trek history. World War IV was about to kick off. Essentia, basically at this stage now, she is grey, and I paraphrase from the last episode review, she's a nasty bitch or something along those lines. That's what he said, that,
very
not
nasty.
Me. Yeah. She basically loses her shit and launches all those cool ass ships. I don't know if I call them cool. She launches all those massive ships that she's been building around the clock through multiple, I want to call them portals, but I think they're wormholes.
Now that you say that, it could be wormhole / portal kind of thing.
They
obviously lead to other universes or timelines or whatever.
As we get on later in this review, they do. I am fairly confident it's a wormhole because they talk about threading the needle and trying to find a way to make all this timey-wimey stuff work via all the wormholes. Portal, who's to say a portal isn't a wormhole and a wormhole isn't a portal?
True, that's true.
You know, she is warned essentially by her own lackeys. Her own lackeys say, don't do this, it's kind of, you know, the shit will hit the fan if you do this. So you're opening all the portals for all the ships to go through at the same time, right, instead of just one or two at a time, and you know, guerrilla tactics and whatnot. And the targets are multiple Starfleet star bases that are basically going to take out as many of them as they possible, which is smart. That's what you do. You've got to take out the main defense platforms. Gray notes here that he was a fan of the EFX. What the hell is EFX?
FX.
Oh, God, that's you lazy man. You lazy man.
That's an actual real thing.
I thought it was a grayism for CGI or FX.
Well, CGI, right? Computer EX. Graphics. Wait a minute.
There you go.
I forgot what the I stands for. But yeah, effects. It could be sound effects, you know, video effects.
That's the thing,
effects,
is it?
Oh, okay. In general, effects.
I'll take your word for it.
We're just very happy with the animators because they're just so good. I'm going to make an effort to try to see if I can get a hold of an animator or maybe more than one animator and see if we can get them on the show. I think I might be able to do that. It's easier to get maybe an animator on the show than it is to get one of the stars. Because the stars are very busy, and it'd be lucky if we can, you know, get any of them. But animators, not so much. So we'll see.
Lots of questions to ask these animators, certainly. The work they do is stellar, and Gray's a fan. I'm a fan as well. They've done a cracking job so far. And even, I think it was in the previous episode, Gray, was it the previous episode review? Yeah. Where you saw the model of the original Voyager in Janeway's quarters. That looked real life almost. It's weird how a model within an animated show looks, and it looks so lifelike. They've done such a good job of it. So animation has got no limits, it seems. You can make it real if you want to.
Now they can involve computers as well as hand-drawn, as well as, you know, I mean, they have so many tools at their disposal. Animators must love it because they can do all kinds of things now that couldn't be done before.
Yeah,
I mean, the old days was animators had to literally draw thousands of cells to even make a sequence, because every time a character moved, they had to draw it so that the move was just a little bit, so when it was all put together, it looked smooth. So you can imagine for some of those older animated movies, I mean, thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of drawings. So the computer really helped with that, because you can draw it once, then it'll draw it again for you, and then you move it along, and then you draw it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so hell with the olden days. Not a fan.
Yeah.
Not a fan. That's too much. Far too much, and I'm lazy. I'll leave it to the professionals. They've done such a good job. Now, at this stage here, I call them the brains of the operation, so the smartest folk of the kids, basically, and that's Majel, Rock, Zero, and Wes is joining them as the grown-up adult, although sometimes he acts like a kid as well. And they see all these wormholes, there's lots of them, and the kids and Wes can think of a way, they're actively saying, let's work the problem, you know? What can we do with this? They're all smart people. Okay, Wes has lost his marbles a little bit, but he's still the same old Wes, and he's still a smart guy without the timey-wimey mojo. So if anyone can do it, it's Wes and these kids. And they figure out a way via math, right, air brackets there, to actually thread the needle, as I think they call it, and I called it as well. They could find the exact point or the exact wormhole that they need to send the ship through, the protostar, to get it back to where it was supposed to be, and then sort out the timey-wimey problem. It's never going to be that easy, is it? But I mean, that's the plan.
We heard Wes explain it like it was easy, but of course it's not.
Well, that's Wes for you, isn't it?
Right, because he was saying basically that you needle and a thread thing. You got to go into the proper one to be able to sew them all back together again and make the universe whole. But figuring out which one is a task that they're trying to do, which is going to be pretty tough. But we'll see.
I'd like some temporal mechanic scientist type folks to actually sit back and watch that. You do get scientist that will review Star Trek in general or seasons and go, right, that was bullshit, or yeah, actually there was a lot of logic to that. So this one is, I'm bordering on 50-50 at best, Gray, because they exaggerate a little bit. But anyway, but not to worry with the plan, as batshit crazy as it might sound and as hard as it sounds to pull off, because that said, see, Gray does that and then he realizes that we're an audio podcast as well. That's a he likes to show the Trekway mug off from time to time, to make sure people don't forget, even though no one can order it yet.
One of my favorite mugs to drink coffee in.
That's it. Not to worry though, with their plan, because Voyager and Protostar will be there to try and bust their way through the offense. I mean, I sarcastically say that because two starships really is not going to be able to handle that. When I first saw that, Gray, I'm just like, yeah, okay, you guys are going to get absolutely smashed up. I don't care how advanced these starships are. You see the amount of enemy ships that are trying to go through, and it's a lot. It's. Did you think it was a bit too much, Gray, or were you willing to let it slide because you enjoyed the story until this point?
It could have been worse, put it that way. But I think it was a bit much. But I blame that half on maybe what they did, and the other half on the fact that it is a animated show and they needed to move it along. So they do little things like that, thinking like, what's the worst of two evils, this one or doing it a really bad mistake? So,
well, Jamie does say they are the only defense. She literally says that. And we know why, because there's a lot of the fleet and a lot of the other ships actually have to go on Romulan evacuation duty, right? So we get that. That's important. But at this stage, the Synth War hasn't quite kicked in. It's about to, like the bombing of Mars and whatnot, and we cover that later on. That hasn't actually come up as news yet. It's about to happen. And I know Admiral Dick, sorry, Jellicoe, those names sound so similar.
Admiral Jelly Roll.
Admiral Dick. Admiral Jellicoe is, it said prior that we can't send any more ships for that reason. Now, it's a very popular story. Gray, where you're the only ship or ships around for X, Y, and Z reason, right? Various reasons. And this one makes sense, kinda. However, see when this happens and it's that severe. And oh, by the way, Admiral Dick, I'm Jamie and I pretend I'm Jamie. Admiral Dick, there is a lot of massive mofo ships coming through to hit all your star bases at the same time. Could you maybe send some of those ships and screw the Romulans just for a moment? Because this is a now problem. And any project manager will say, you have to manage your resources properly and move things about. And you're going to be screwed unless you send... And I'm not going to apologize this time for this nitpick. I feel strongly about this one. That is bullshit. And even if they can't get there in time, we know there are a small number of limited ships around this time period that have the slipstream or the quantum slipstream, whatever the hell that thing's called at Voyager. It has got.
Yeah, you would think they could at least send one ship, let alone.
Send these ones. Yeah. You've got. What happened to the Dauntless? Send that on. Like, I'm thinking. Are you still happy to let that slide, Gray? Are you thinking, right, okay, that's bullshit now, I'm sorry. Like, Romulus was not an immediate danger. They could have paused it for a day or two, you know?
I think it bothers you more than me, but I do agree with you. It's like, I thought what was going to happen was he was going to say, we're spread thin, okay, but I can still spare a ship or two. And then you would have one or two ships showing up. And even that probably wouldn't have been enough, but it would have made sense. So I think they could have at least said one or two will get there in time, and it still could have progressed the story. Wouldn't have changed anything.
Exactly.
But, it's the old cliffhanger. We've seen this thing many times in this show and other shows, where they always do the same thing. Well, we can't get there for at least a day, and like, but we're gonna be dead in an hour. Well, can I tell you? It's just like okay. We'll deal with it.
That's a It's a difficult one. If they'd sent one or two ships, they would have still been up against it, right? Because there's so many of these enemy ships. And even if they had sent a small fleet, look at the end of, was it Picard season one or two, where they sent the copy and paste ships through.
That was a lot of them.
And they didn't use them because of money and CGI budgets. We get that, but they sent them in, and it can be done. In this example here, you send a bunch of ships through, and you've still got more of an even match and fight. Maybe it's over quicker, but I know Star Trek is not about pew-pew, right? But you ask any diehard Star Trek fan, including us two, and we want to see more pew-pew than we actually get. I know it's all about science and exploration and all that, but there's some dicks in the universe, and sometimes pew-pew is the only thing they understand. And this is why do you think I love the Defiant as much as I do? It's so different from a normal Starfleet ship. It is Starfleet, but it is absolutely ram-packed of power. And you can tell it pisses me off. Like, this was just too far-fetched. It really was. If there'd been some writing mechanic that said, listen, they're cut off, we've cut off all subspace around this solar system or something, you know, whatever, timey-wimey or space mechanics or something, I would have understood, but...
Anyway. I mean, maybe I'm not trying to make excuses for them, but maybe they're taking the old school approach. If you were to equate this to nautical terms, which a lot of times they do, to take a fleet of ships, let's say, that are on the ocean and telling them to just, hey, head over there to help them because they need it, they ain't going to get there that fast. It's going to be a while before they can make it over there. So in same terms, as we're talking about the universe, we're talking about, you know, huge, huge, vast distances between from ship to ship in some cases. So you could argue the point saying, like, you know, do you know how big the universe is? And then we have to get to there, you know, or whatever. But regardless, I'm making up a possible excuse for them. But that's why I was saying before, like, well, at least one ship should be close. I mean, even if you can't send a whole fleet over there, don't tell me you can't send at least one ship, you know. So it would have been nice to have seen, like, I don't know, a Galaxy class ship pull up or some kind of ship, at least one. You know, it's not taking away from the show. The show is still good, but yeah, I agree.
That's far fetched, I must admit, Gray. I saw your analogy. I saw it here, and then I saw Janeway of the Enterprise, the Voyager A, just hit a bunch of quantum torpedoes into it and actually shatter it. Yes. And on the ocean, ships going from A to B are slow. Even today, it takes a while to get anywhere. And space is big, but warp drive is really, really, really fast. Like, really fast. And then quantum is just like, hold my beer. I can jump 75 light years in half an hour or whatever it is, you know. So I see where you're coming from, mate. Definitely far-fetched for me, though, that's all. It's still giving Admiral Dick some kudos points here, man. You're letting him off. That's why he's a dick. Anyway,
That's why you need that guy. He's got to be part of the story that causes problems.
Yeah, so we need
an excuse. Throw Admiral Jelly out there.
Apologize for being very ranty, people, but I don't apologize at the same time, because a lot of the time I would say, oh, we'll let that slide and we're moving on the story, and it's just like, I'm sorry. The whole of Starfleet is literally at peril right now. And in the finale of the last season, what happened? You sent a small fleet. You didn't have many ships, but you sent what you could to do the job, because you were in mortal... Yeah. You were about to perish there and then. But anyway, right, let's move on, Greg, before
outweigh the needs of...
one of these portals that's about to bust up all these star bases... One opens right above Starfleet HQ in San Francisco, right? And that was cool to see. I always like a shot when you see the Golden Gate Bridge in San Fran again in Starfleet HQ. Always cool. And it's literally appearing right up above their HQ. But Voyager comes to the rescue and smashes it up with some quantums. I did get a bit excited about that. And do you remember what Janeway said as she smashed up that ship with a portal grid?
He's killed it.
I'll help you out. I could do this all day, she said. I could do this all day.
Oh, right. It's in the notes, man.
Yep.
I know. I was looking too far ahead.
No, you need one of these like teleprompter things that goes along, you know? No, she says she can do this all day, which I kind of made up for the lack of really bad excuses in writing in the prior scene. And I really, really loved that because, well, I love Janeway as a character anyway, great, but Kate Mulgrew is just the perfect fit for her, and she is 110% back in her old shoes again that she left vacant for so long, wasn't she? And she does. She kicks arse. I said this before. She is the female equivalent of Picard. Like, takes no shit, and you do not mess with her. And she busts up.
And a little Kirk on the side.
A little bit of Kirk on the side, yeah. She doesn't sleep about with a lot of the opposite sex, though, to be fair. So maybe not that part.
Well, I wasn't talking about that part. Okay.
I mean, Kirk was seen anything female moving and alive and humanoid, and he was game. Which was amusing, even in his own ship. But yeah, so that was cool to see. Greg, this scene got Greg pretty excited as well. He was a fan of that as well. It was always cool. Now, they don't. I'm going to mention this point anyway, and it's a factor of physics. I know it's not really a gripe. They don't have nowhere near enough quantum torpedoes to finish the job. Finally, a Voyager ship where they realise that they're about to actually run out of torpedoes eventually, and it just takes Voyager A a lot closer to home compared to original Voyager in the Delta Quadrant, who never seemed to run out of the f***ing things. Ever. Never ran out of torpedoes, mate.
But it did definitely make more sense because they were actually blasting these ships. You know, there were so many of them out there, and they were sending three quantums per ship.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, like, you know, with 10, 20, 30, 40 ships out there, there's no way they're going to be able to keep up.
Yeah.
You know, with it. And the phasers, although they're good, they're not as strong as a quantum. So, you know, take longer to take down one of those ships with a phaser. You can do damage, but with the phasers as compared to the quantum.
Just need stronger phasers. That's all you need. Crank them up.
Yeah, but phasers, but just by their own thing, phasers are not meant to be. You know, it's just like it's like in anything else. There's more powerful weapons that you can use that have a bigger initial boom, so to speak, as opposed to one that just causes a certain amount of damage as long as you keep it focused. And that's the way they've always done it. You know, you switch to torpedoes when you really have to.
Yeah.
And you supplement with the phasers.
I know you can. I know you can, to an extent, make your own torpedoes if you have the relevant resources. And I'm guessing, I'm not a Star Trek science expert here, but one excuse for Voyager in the Delta Quadrant was it only had photons at this stage. I think quantums were very, very brand new. You like a few ships had them, the Defiant, Enterprise E, not many ships at all. And then getting lost for 7 years doesn't help you getting restocked. But I think probably, although they never addressed it, I don't think, they probably made their own photon torpedoes whenever they could restock on supplies and materials. Quantums, you can't make on a ship. I'm fairly confident of that, and that's why each ship has a limited number of them, because they are so hard to make, even in more modern Star Trek terms, Gray. I love this. I love the science and the tech of Star Trek, and you have to make them and confined. Think of the ZPM from Stargate Atlantis, right? Those little things that power the city, right? They've got to be made in control environments, and particular laboratories and confined, restricted areas with the relevant materials. You can't do them in a starship. So you'll see a lot of ships that have got hybrids. You'll see a lot of ships that will still carry a main supply of photon torpedoes because they're, in comparison, far easier to make. And a limited number of quantums. I mean, I believe the Enterprise E had both. So I just love the stuff behind that. Like, I get that the quantums are very limited, although I didn't see them launch any photon torpedoes at any point, actually. So maybe they only have quantums. But nevertheless, they have a limited number of them. We see a few at a time being launched at each of these ships. And Jamie pretty much says, listen, we're going to run out quick here. So bloody thread the needle quickly, would you? So yeah, after my little rant out of the way, apologies. Phasers are not strong enough. Gray's right. But, you know, better to have them than not. Hollow Janeway has been busting poor Chakotay's balls for, it seems like, the whole start of this episode, if you remember, Gray. And I think it was purely down to the fact that she knows she's going to get wiped for this plan to go ahead. And she's thinking ahead. She knows that everything has to go back to the way it was, in which case Hollow Janeway will know nothing about the kids or anything that comes after. So I get it. She's a bit upset. Like, she's going to get wiped. It makes sense. Tars Lamora, I always forget. At this stage, I'm scratching my head, Gray. It's more timey-wimey stuff, trying to actually figure out what's going on in terms of how they fix this. I know why Janeway gets a sore head with this one and drinks a lot of coffee, because I'd be drinking whiskey or something stronger than that, to be honest with you. The brains, as I call it, they figure out exactly how their plan's going to work and how they're going to get the Protostar through the right wormhole to Tars Lamora and put it in the exact same location that it was found initially, to then put everything back to the way it was. What's it you know here, Gray? Small changes to time doesn't matter as long as the main stuff is correct. What do you mean by that?
This is something that, because when the four of them are all trying to figure out, you know, how they're going to do this or what they're going to do this, they finally figured out that, you know, there was one wormhole that was not like the others, so to speak. And then they started saying, yeah, but we still got to be at the exact moment, you know, we have to. And then all of a sudden they were saying, well, wait a minute, why would it have to be the exact moment? The important thing is that the Protostar has to be on Tars, and maybe doesn't have to be at the exact moment. And so Wes just went, you're right, small changes of time don't matter as long as the main stuff is correct.
I remember
correct.
The line, though. Yeah.
And I thought that was really excellent writing, because every time you talk about a time show, it's like, well, you got to be like, you know, right to the second, otherwise, you know, you're screwed. Well, that's not necessarily so. It depends on the case. So I thought that was a very smart thing. I'm going like, okay, now that's good. That makes a lot of sense. So that lessened the burden on them to some extent, because they knew they just had to get it there and not have to worry about the exact moment. As long as they got it there within reason, everything would work out. So
it's also, as well, they had to do that so that I wouldn't bitch and complain about some thing they got wrong or one bit of writing they did or did not do. So this way it's a nice caveat. They can go, right, that stops that pain in the arse Trevor from complaining again.
I'm sure they'll be calling you up going like, was that one okay, Trevor? Or did we screw up again? Well,
get on the phone, I'll complain to you, don't worry about that. So as I said previously, I think the last episode, the kids are basically splitting up, which they shouldn't be doing, but they're splitting up nevertheless. They've basically got to climb to one of the wormhole generators. They've got to actually basically kill the power so they can bring Ascensia's plan to an end. And you see how far they've got to climb, because they can't transport up there because, well, it's all timey-wimey, temporal soup stuff, and it'd be too easy to do that. You just see Jankum look up and go, oh, man. I can almost hear him say, I wish they'd been to the gym prior to this. It's a bit of a climb they've got to do, but they've got to do it nevertheless. And they need to reconfigure one of them to basically take the lot of them down. Tall order, Gray says. I don't know if he meant that as a pun or he's a walking pun. Both. I don't think he should have meant that.
Well, the other thing that they use in television a lot, another one of the same tropes again, whenever they show I have to go somewhere, it's always sky high. And you're like, oh, we're going to go there.
Because
I'm not knocking it. It's fine. It really is. But when you think about it, you're going like, man, if that was real life, They are not going up the towers that fast, man. That's going to take some time.
If it was real life, we would just say, like, you fancy a beer, Gray? The world's probably going to end soon. Let's just enjoy it just now. I'm not climbing it. Just, I'm out. Now, little Mirth is making up for the fact that he was a bit of a shitbag before, hiding behind Jankum. He is going to have to take on one of these robot minions that Gwen has. Not Gwen has, Essentia has, sorry. And I'm thinking at this stage, little Murph is going to get bashed up because, you know, he's a little guy. He can't really take on much. Whilst Gwen has another rematch with Essentia. And at this stage, I'm thinking this is a bit long in the tooth. But, you know, Essentia really does hate Gwen, so it's got to be done. Little Murph, he wins, of course. I had no doubt at all. I always knew he was going to win. Yeah, right.
I don't know, though. Taking on that robot was... I was sitting there trying to figure out, like, how is he going to do this? Luckily, he can see so
A lot of Stretch Armstrong stuff, and, yeah, it was kind of that was kind of cool. And I thought he'd actually perished for a little moment. I thought he went... they played it as if he'd fallen down a precipice, but, you know, of course he comes, he pulls himself up, and he's okay. Thankfully for that.
I like the idea, though, there was a scene where he grabbed his head and was trying to, like, pull his head off. So that when he did come back up, he came back with his head, with the robot's head.
Just to make sure. He's like, look, I honestly killed it. Look, believe me.
Yeah, look, there it is.
So it was kind of on the edge kind of stuff. It was a couple of good fights. It was interesting how they split the fights up and who caught who, actually, to be honest here. Dal manages to connect. There was a cable that comes away free. Just think of Back to the Future 1. They were almost set up for time travel, and then the lightning kind of knocks... Well, actually, no. I think it's the Doc's big arse gets in the way and knocks one of the... gets in the way and knocks one of the cables off, and he has to get in and attach it just in the nick of time. Exact same thing happens here with Mr. Dal. He manages to connect the loose cable just in the nick of time. And Murph comes to the rescue and stops him from being a pancake. Shocking. Get it. Great notes down here. That's sackable material. That is shocking. Well, he does get zapped a little bit, and that's why he kind of falls.
Yeah, he does.
Murph catches.
That's why he's unconscious and he starts falling. Like, well, at least it was a quick way down.
That's true. Yeah, it's not much quicker, really. Right. Now, okay, heads up, you've been warned, rant time, I'm coming again. And it is one that I can let slide, but not easily. Those ships that are going through the portals to bust up Starfleet, or the Federation in general, they're going through the portals at the slowest possible speed, knowing two things that can move faster than 0 miles per hour. They are huge ships, right? They're not fighters, so I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They're not supposed to move fast. But, I mean, Jesus Christ, Deep Space Nine moved quicker from its starting location to the wormhole than these things did, and it's way bigger. Well, it's bigger anyway, I think. Is that a rant, but we can move on, Gray, or it's a storytelling trope? Or one line would have worked from Essentia to her minions.
Yeah.
Can we not move this any quicker? No, I'm giving her all she can, Captain, and it can't go any faster, and blah, 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 you know?
Comes down to mass, time distortions, things like that. They could have said a couple of quick things. Yeah. So, but that one didn't bother me this much. The other one bothered me more with the ships being, like, nowhere around. This one is bothered me less, but I get it.
Yeah. I'll let it slide after the big complaint beforehand. It's just, yeah. One line would have fixed that one, to be honest with you. The Essentia and Gwen fight finally comes to an end, and it's full on, Gray. They're basically going hammer and tong, battering each other.
They're falling off ledges. They're, like, getting battered.
Yeah. And it looks like it's maybe over for Gwen for a moment. But then, basically, Gwen's old man comes to the rescue, the freedom fighter, the resistance fighter that he is. He makes his way onto the platform with some fellow locals, and they basically share what I call their mojo energy. That thing they do that looks like
head glows, kind
of book from Discovery where you can talk to wildlife. Yeah. So they do this telepathic thing where they can talk to each other, and it's basically they all focus their mojo energy into Gwen so that she can resist the knife, the blade that's coming towards her face, and basically turns her into some kind of mind thought ninja. I just thought they should have all rushed Asensia and took her down that way. I thought this was pretty cool, Gray. I will like this. This was pretty smart. She was literally something out of Dragon Ball Z after this one, to be honest. She used to turn into some sort of super being that could do things with her mind, like as in telekinesis. I was like, wow, I didn't know she could do
I like
this.
Her eyes glowing. That looked pretty cool. Iris are glowing like bright white.
Yeah, they were. It's nice to know like the limits of what a species can do when push come to shove, and if everyone gives their mojo across, then what she can actually do is pretty remarkable.
I often thought of trying to see if I could send my mojo over the Atlantic to you, but I don't know if it'll work.
Nah, the Discord's not good enough for that, mate. It'll just break it.
No.
Discord will just
not
do that.
Not advanced enough yet.
Relying on bloody Discord. Even though we're Nitro Premium members, it doesn't make any bloody difference.
I would actually change the name of Discord. Just call it Mojo Cord. That sounds so much better.
Well, Discord, if you think of the title of Discord, to sew Discord.
Yeah, I know.
It's
I
ironic
about that because
it's called that.
It's not usually used in a good way, generally speaking.
Yeah.
And yet they call it that. That's kind of.
So if you want another title, Discord is good. But if you want another title, Shitcord maybe. So the one remaining wormhole threading the needle, right? That remains. It does remain, and the protostar gets a hail from the loom, right? I wasn't expecting this one. Like, hello, I wasn't expecting to try and talk to anyone. It's kind of a bit random, this, but there's a reason for it. It is a bit ridiculous. I'm a storytelling mechanic, it's, you know. But, you know, it is a self-space signal after all, which could almost be anything. It's just me being a nitpick.
Actually, that was one of my things, but I forgot to turn it green. Sorry about that.
Oh, well, that's just great. He's not on the ball. I do most of the notes. Gray does, unless I do a tiny bit of the notes, but he can't even do that.
Yeah, well, as soon as you said that was ridiculous, that's why I dropped in subspace, because that's what they said. They didn't say it was a hail, so they can get away with that one, because subspace signal could be almost anything. It could be nothing, or it could be something.
So that's all Gray's fault, people. That one there. Yep.
Yes. I came up with a good example, though.
the loom at the end, at this stage, they're... They enter the last wormhole that's open, because Janeway's literally been going about smashing up all these other wormholes with the limited number of quantums that she's got. And the thing is, these ships couldn't really fight back, which I thought was a bit... I couldn't quite buy that one. They are very offensive, those enemy ships, and you would think they'd have some defences on them, bar shields. But anyway, she takes them all out for the most part. But there is the one left, and then the looms start coming through that one remaining wormhole, and it's like water gushing down the drain. There's loads of them coming through, and you do hear that sound that they make over subspace, which is a really cool bad guy.
It's a pretty cool and terrible sounding thing, like the scratchy.
It's eerie.
It's eerie. And almost sounds like somebody scratching a chalkboard at the same time. It's like.
Oh, I hate that noise. I've always hated that noise. But that's not what you called it before. Bad Asensia. Bitch Asensia is what you called it before.
I was trying to be nice, sort of.
She can tell, Gray says, she can tell the loom are coming, and now she feels bad. I don't know why. I mean...
She finally comes to her senses and goes, oh, this isn't a good thing.
See, she knows... Surely she must know that she's in peril, Like, the Loom are not going to not attack and kill her and her minions. They'll attack everything. Mm. So I don't know if she really thought this through properly, you know? But nevertheless...
I think she was blinded by the fact that she was so one-way focused. Because remember, she even went against whatever her top-notch scientists were saying and said, the hell with you guys, I'm going to do it this way. Anyway. So she was very, very focused to a fault.
Because she's got revenge on the brain so much, it makes her blind to anything else. Mm-hmm. Reason, to be honest with you. Their plan of attack now, Voyager will guide the protostar through the wormhole where they can beam the crew back to Voyager when they land, so that everything was back in the first episode of the Prodigy, or was it the second episode? Yeah, right to the very, very start again. What's the worst that can happen? The protostar has to be empty, otherwise it won't work. So they go through, and I'm thinking all the Loom here against two ships, and it's mostly Voyager that's actually doing the attacking. But of course, Janeway says, set weapons to maximum. One of our hardcore bitch lines, like, don't mess with me, which I like. I always like it when she says, oh, go get them, Janeway. Gray says, go and F them up, to be honest with you. Notice the little line, Gray. Notice the little line they say as they go through the wormhole. I think it was Janeway that said it.
Yeah.
Right, you saying?
Mm-hmm.
Once more into the breach. I do love that line. That's a great line. That is a great line, Admiral. Absolutely brilliant.
I can't remember what movie they first used that in. It's an old saying that's been used before.
It's been used even before Star Trek. It was probably used in one of the Star Trek movies before, but it's been used multiple times in Hollywood. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tysi seems to be fully recovered, our number one. The fact that most of his body was aged massively, the doc was able to fix him up, so that's good. I just noticed that. Wes on the ship teases, because he's teasing, he knows what's going to happen. I think Dal's trying to get information out of him, right? And he's like, I can't tell you that. He says, you know, you all have to stay together. And Dal's like, well, yeah, we know that. You told us that. And he's like, nah, for things that were still to come. Season three.
There we go.
While they're going through here, when, bear in mind, Voyager's, it was able to reconfigure its phasers to match the variants of the Loom to do some damage on them. But when it's firing, it seems to not be hitting any of them. I've noticed this the last couple of times I've engaged the Loom. The phaser shots don't actually, they seem to be completely missing every single time and not damaging or killing any of the Loom at all. And it's just an observation I made. I don't really care about that fact, Gray, to be honest with you. But she says power's starting to run out, basically, or paraphrasing something along those lines, you know. Phasers seem to be running out of juice. And Jamie, I need to educate you in how starships and phasers work. As long as you have power, unlike torpedoes, as long as you have power and your phasers are not damaged, which they weren't, then you're not going to run out of power. You're good. Keep firing. You know, phasers and photons or torpedoes are very different things. You run out of torpedoes, you won't run out of phasers unless you run out of juice completely, which they hadn't. So, what's your little rant here? Voyager was being drained of power. Everything can run out of power. It wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
When?
It was in the show. I went back to look at it.
No, that was before. It recovered, but then.
Nope. I went back and looked at it again, and I think it was Tysi's or whatever. I can't remember now. It said it. He said flat out, we're being drained of power rapidly, or the doctor said it, I forget which. And he was saying how fast it was dropping. So phasers can pull on power of the ship, but if the ship's power diminishes, so does your phasers at the same rate. In other words, the strength.
Was this the main fight with Gwen, Essentia's ship first time around? That two-parter?
No. This was in the middle of this big fight.
This was near the start of this episode, wasn't it then? But it only happened briefly. They got fired upon briefly. So how did they escape then?
No, this when they're having the big battle where they're throwing the quantums all over the place, and then stuff really started hitting the fan. Then they started getting drained of power, and then they but what Janeway did was she knew that power was draining, but she just said keep on firing. So they kept firing the phasers, but then she says reroute auxiliary power so that she could buy more time to keep the phasers going while the protostar did what it had to do. Mm. She was going all or nothing at this point.
I didn't see anything fire back at Voyager. Not to say it didn't happen, I just didn't see it. She was going in and out, or I'm about to run out of torpedoes, which was a fact. But I don't recall anything firing back at Voyager at this stage. Might be wrong.
You have to go back and take a look, because they definitely said that. Whether we saw it or not, I don't remember, because I have to go back and see it.
Yeah,
but he definitely said that, and
that's why I was wondering. Like, oh. That's why I was wondering, Gray, why is the ship running out of power? I couldn't get that one. You know. Okay. You know, let's say that happened. In all fairness, because when it gets hit with that beam from the main ship, yeah, that does screw you up. I just don't remember it being hit by that big beam, because that's a big deal. And how they escaped if they were hit with that beam again. Because it locks you in place, you can't move. That's the other thing as well, but Voyager's still moving about. So if someone knows that wants to go and watch it again, because I probably will watch it again, then please comment below. Now, here we go. This bit of the episode, I mean, it was decent up to now, but from this stage until the end, it's just cool. Cool stuff happens. They lose all navigation, but Janeway says, not all navigation. And then she gets Cetacean Ops on the phone, a.k.a. Jillian. Jillian the Whale. That's her Saturday night when she goes out with the girls, Jillian. enact echelon formation, right? Now, I was like, how is this going to work, right? They probably are great navigators because they swim the seas and they know where to go. So, not probably, sure. They are great navigators. How does that translate to the large pool or body of water they've got in the ship? And it almost looked like something out of like a Star Fox game. You know, when you got the plane and you gotta thread it through all the rings and stuff, right, to get the perfect score. It looked like a tunnel effect all the way through the water, and Jillian's kind of going, right, echelon formation, and she's going through it, and that's literally relaying. I don't know if it's relaying coordinates straight to the nav console, or she's literally piloting the ship. Let's assume it's the former, not the latter, because I couldn't get my head around a whale navigating.
They didn't make an explanation, but the way I was looking at it,
it was cool.
Yeah, I looked at it as being echolocation, but you got to figure that these creatures, obviously, since they're more intelligent than they are today, would also have a more advanced echolocation, natural echolocation system within them. So when she was swimming around like that, she was swimming around because she was sending out the echolocations in all directions as much as she could. And she, in turn, organically was detecting what was going on and where to drive the ship, which I thought was just absolutely stellar. I hadn't even stopped to think about that. And then when I saw this, or when they said we're going to go into Cetacean Ops, I was going like, yeah, that's good. You know, and remember, broadcasting a wave through space, really, when you think about it, space is what? Dark matter. There is something there, just like in an ocean. So the dark matter is all over the place. So she's just transferring these waves and bouncing them off them like anything else, and it's coming right back.
Great.
So I just thought the whole concept of what she did, you know, the whale, was perfect, and it made total sense. So
I think it was cool as hell. Definitely thought it was cool as hell, and it didn't really upset me too much. I thought it was brilliant. However, I couldn't get my head around how it would work. And I kind of gave up quickly because I was like, because it was cool, I just moved on, you know. But if I drill it down even a little bit, if it is echolocation, let's say for argument's sake it is, I don't pretend to be a physicist here. I'm really not, far from it. You'll be surprised to hear. But echolocation usually has to work in either water or air, right? None of which are in space. It's like hearing sound in space, but we let that slip because otherwise Star Trek would be dull without it. echolocation only works in her tank, mate. It only works in her tank. It doesn't work in space. There's nothing there.
No, I look at it as being she needs a tank to be able to broadcast her echolocation because she can't just be floating in space. I mean, they could, but they don't have time to get her out there.
It's
right?
got to bounce back off of something, though, mate. A wave's got to bounce back
right.
off something.
So what I'm saying is that dark matter, being the ocean of dark matter, it's a real thing. It's a real material.
True.
The dark matter is, it's almost the same as we walk through the air. We take it for granted that, you know, like, oh, yeah, you walk through the air, there's nothing there. Yeah, you're pushing something against physical stuff. When you walk through the air, you're physically pushing the air. So you are running into stuff all the time. You live everywhere you go. So the whale is basically broadcasting through the water, through the dark matter, and bouncing off these objects, which is why she's swimming around in circles, so she can continue in echolocation constantly. And she's able to tell what it is, again, organically, and then somehow she transmits that to the computer, I guess through her thoughts or whatever. I'm not sure about that. but that would make sense.
Nevertheless, it was cool as hell, man. I was like, yeah, whatever.
She actually Bluetoothed into the computers. That's how that worked.
but the Bluetooth went down halfway through it, and she had to call IT support.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
you see little divers swimming out to her.
There was,
help fix her.
It was cool as hell, so however it worked, I don't care. I like getting into the minutia of it and like,
yeah, sure.
What happens the in part. Theory and all that, and yeah, like, and, mm-hmm. and if it was bad writing, that'd be different, but that was just a cool scene, so I didn't care.
It was great writing. That's what was so cool about it. Yeah.
Drilling to the rescue. The ships do get through at the end, and there's a cool scene. Is there a just kind of leaving of Protostar Echoes? They see that all the timelines kind of come together and converging. Your little
all
little
protostars.
Ghost. It's almost like you're going for a race in a racing game, Gray, and you're racing against the ghost, you know, like other players that have been online before, or Elden Ring, where you see the players that were there before, the ghosts, but you can't interact with them. It was like that. And the reason there's a gaming line in there is because, yes, we're a gaming podcast as well, believe it or not, outside the Star Trek. Cool little scene there. And the doc has come to the rescue as Hollow Jamie's still looking devastated that she's going to get terminated, and he's found a way to back her up, thankfully. So he's found the world's biggest floppy disk drive. That's what it looked like anyway, or a zip drive.
It was pretty big, yeah.
It was a big floppy drive, man.
the only thing, and this is just another little nitpick, just to say it because I feel like it, is that earlier when she was saying, like, he says, well, we'll just back you up, and she's going like, yeah, but you don't understand how big... You have nothing big enough to contain me. I've become that large.
Yeah.
And then later the doctor goes, see, I put her all on this thing.
Yeah, they found like, what they found a way. And they don't need to explain it, but you're right. It is a small nitpick, isn't it?
Yeah, because like, he holds up a cartridge and goes like, wait a minute. She's supposed to be so big that you fit her on that? I mean, okay.
Oh, but
again, nitpick.
They didn't tell you. If they'd said, oh, but hey, listen, we done this and... And Jillian came to the rescue somehow. Jillian saved us again and saved the Hollow Janeway. Like, I don't know. But yeah. It was amusing. It was a massive bloody floppy.
It didn't take anything at all away from the episode. But I just found it a bit comical. He just holds up the disc and goes, it's all here. And I'm
well,
like,
see, I've had a couple of nitpicks, right? And one big nitpick, right? Which, a fact, Gray, you can see this, but don't tell anyone.
Okay.
It's at the score at the end. Right, anyway, we'll get to that in a moment. Where were we? Yeah, so Hollow Janeway is going to be backed up. It's all good. You can reset everything to scratch and it'll be absolutely fine. Good old Doc to the rescue, Gray says. We don't know how he done it, but he done it. Maybe he deleted some of his shit Hollow novels to free up some space. That's all I can think.
That's right. One for the team.
As they're leaving the Protostar, they do have sweet memories of their time in the Protostar prior, which is really cool. A bit emotional. That was really, really nice that you could tell the kids are really emotional about it. And I would imagine, in theory, they would actually have to unleash the weapon again. Because remember before when they were using the Protostar, they'd managed to contain that weapon. They never completely eliminated it. They just put up the most advanced Starfleet bloody firewall that you ever saw and controlled it, contained it. But they now have to purposely unleash it because they're resetting everything back to scratch. And then Voyager comes back through the wormhole and the looms start disappearing. So things are starting to slowly but surely go back to normal. Meanwhile, Gwen is now fully recovered. Her little, whatever that thing was called that Doc gave her, yeah, it fell off and she's good. She's back to normal. Thank God for that. And just like the OG Voyager, the Voyager A lands in Solum. I'm glad it done this, Gray. Mm-hmm. Keep a lot of the main features of your original starship. If the original starship can land on a planet, so should your follow-up sister ships as well. And they land on Solum because they want to do a first contact the right way. Which I like. So technically, that should have been the Cerritos. I'm sorry. The Cerritos does second follow-up visits, although this was never a proper first contact, so I'll let it slide. I'll let it slide. I would have loved to have seen Boimler and Mariner come along and just make a joke about it all. And here, we're here to do the second contact, you know. But anyway, so that was amusing. Wes finally calls his mum, Gray. About bloody time. What did we say last time? Don't be that guy. Call your mum. Go and do it now. Pause it. Pause this and go and call your mum. Right?
You waited enough of years.
Come on, man. Yeah, so he finally calls his mum as we get Beverly Crusher back. She just looks, I said this last time, she looked weird. Like, I think she's supposed to be younger than Picard, I get it, but the hair is just way different. Sweet moment. Little sweet moment. I like that. Emotional for both of us. And before he goes, he gets to meet his brother, because this is the thing, he can time and thought and all that, so he's talking to her initially and then he just appears in front of her, just transports over, doesn't, no science to explain it, he just does it, whatever. And they'll have a little hug, it's sweet and all that, but before he leaves, it's Beverly that says, I want you to meet someone, and you hear a baby cry, and it must be Jack Crusher, man, unless she's had another kid that we don't know about. I mean, you put two and two together, it must be Jack.
It must be. I mean, why would the name is the same, and they definitely dropped the, you know, what happened. I didn't think it was that far, or I should say, I guess, I didn't know the timeline was like that, I guess, until you start realizing what's going on, as we did as we watched the episode. So now thinking back to the way they are in the Starfleet timeline, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So apparently it was 8 months prior, it must have been Picard had visited her. And here's the kid. The thing that was funny, though, is that first you hear him go, you know, making baby sounds, right? And then he goes, who are you? Or something like that, the kid says. I picked up on that the second time I looked. He goes, what's your name? He goes like this.
What? Oh, did you hear that? That's what Jack said. So it's not so much a baby. It's more of a toddler then at this stage, I guess. That's the case.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It sounded like a baby. Then all of a sudden he was... said something. I'm like, okay, then I guess it's a wee bit older.
I like that. I like the fact that I like it when they do things like that, because I think we like it like that, because Discovery piss all over canon so much and try to make new canon when they had no right to do so. But you can make new canon, but it has to make sense in tie in the rest of the stuff that these guys in Prodigy are making new canon, but they're tying in older stuff as well and from other shows to make it make sense. And I love that. Keep giving us Easter eggs like that. I love it. That's got to be little Jack. Otherwise, Beverly's been up to no good with God knows how many men, so we don't want to think about that. This is the end, Gray, as the Doc finishes his Hollow novel. But not before giving a poor officer on the med bay a heart attack, because he said it kind of in his direction, this is the end. And not you, because the poor officer's like, oh, Jesus Christ, man, what are you doing to me? No, you're okay, you're fine. I'm talking about my Hollow novel. I found that amusing. I watched that a couple of times.
The guy's like, oh, I'm dying.
You liked how the main story ends, but the epilogue is excellent. Is this your... I know where we haven't finished this bit yet anyway, but for me, the best part of the two-parter was actually after the main story had finished, Gray, and you got to get the epilogue, as you call it, and the other stuff.
Right.
I'm guessing that's the same for you as well.
Yeah, because sometimes epilogues can be
boring.
Good. Sometimes they can be boring. Sometimes they can be really short.
Yeah.
This one actually devoted enough proper time to make sense.
At least half of it, the last episode.
Yeah, I think it was like 15 minutes or something, which would be half the episode or that episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I like, because I was wondering how I saw there was time left, and I was going like, oh, well, I wonder what they're doing. And then as soon as I saw them go into it, it made sense, and it really kind of tied up some of the loose ends, and you learned a little bit of new stuff, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was good.
They done that in Picard season 3 as well. Like, you have some time to close things off at the end. That's the right way to do it. I love that. Yeah, there's Grey notes here. He's a fan of that. The fact that Gwen has her father back. The kids, more so young adults now, you're right, Grey. They look happy, content. They saved the day again. Well done. And then we see the new, because bear in mind, an admiral can't stay as captain of the ship indefinitely. It can only be on one-off missions, limited scenarios. So she has to technically go back to the desk or retire. And the new Voyager captain is Chakotay. And that's just right, isn't it? That's what should happen, Gray. Were you, are you happy with that or not?
Oh, no. I thought it sounded pretty normal to me.
Yeah.
Especially since Janeway was talking about, you know, maybe she might want to retire anyway. So it all kind of lend itself to the right thing.
I must have missed this, or maybe I heard it really, really quickly. The old-fashioned Navy whistle. What do you call it? Mm-hmm. A boatswain whistle?
Boatswain whistle. Right. It goes way back to the old days in the Navy.
As he goes onto the bridge, is it Chakotay goes onto the bridge?
Whenever a captain, even on the sea
for the first time,
the old, when they board the ship, especially when they take over, then the whistle usually, that particular whistle sounds. And the reason why you hear the whistle is that because they were sticking with tradition, and so they made the whistle sound like an actual real whistle, because back then they had a whistle that they had to adjust the volume with their breath to make it sound right, and so they used their own version. That happened also I can't remember which Star Trek movie it was.
Couple of Star Trek movies.
Yeah, were they using, you see them holding this like electronic thing, but they're kind of moving their fingers as if it was a trumpet or something.
It's when, I'm pretty sure it's when Ambassador Spock come onto the ship. Was it the first
Maybe.
One, the first movie? Yeah, and it's happened a couple of times in Star Trek movies.
Oh, it happens a bunch. Yeah, it happens a few times. Like, if we really looked into it, we could pick out a bunch.
It's for really important characters or really important positions, sorry. Mm-hmm. Or the first time a captain walks onto his or her bridge, and that's the case with Chakotay there. So, the admiral, the vice admiral, Jamie, she's taking early retirement, and I'm basically saying here, nah, she better not. Gray says she just needs a break. Gray, with that attitude, that's why you're completely 110% retired right now. You're giving up, man. You can't be bothered. You're barsh. That's it.
Well,
no,
I like the way they explained it, because you know, we'll get into it in a second, but she did retire. We don't know how long, but you know, she did retire. But you knew there's a way that she's going to do something.
Of course, yeah, you man, 100%. Like, she's a. That's why I said that. Nah, she better not, because I knew probably she wouldn't. But on paper, at this stage, she certainly was supposed to at Starfleet Academy, not with Tilly. She jumped that whole time period. Remember, she's missed that out at the academy. The teacher saying, throw away your temporal mechanics 101 pads, but get your temporal mechanics 201 pads out.
Exactly.
As the kids thought they got away with it for a moment. No, we've evolved it. Anytime Jamie's involved in time travel, we have to update our guys now. So as we have to be...
Mm-hmm. I was saying new edition, like a new edition of a book. You know, like, oh, here's the new one.
That's the new one. We're celebrating First Contact, Gray. First Contact today. I don't know if you noticed that was a thing in the background subtly, which is kind of cool, but then it takes a bit of a downer, because the big floaty screens that we talk about, it seems to be a thing of Star Trek these days. I love these floaty screens. When are you bringing out a floaty screen, Samsung, LG? I'm looking at you. The attack on Mars that we see in Picard is actually happening in front of them at the moment. Now, I love this not because I'm morbid, well, maybe slightly morbid, but I love this because they're tying things in together, making it all right. fit together, this Star Trek puzzle, which I love. It is harrowing, you know, like you see some scenes and whatnot, and it doesn't look very good, but we're reminded, Gray, and I forgot this, how many ships, because Admiral Dick comes on, Jellicoe comes on and actually tells everyone how bad it is. 20,000 vessels were actually taken out during that attack. I don't know if they mentioned that in Picard, they probably did, but I've forgotten. Wow, 20,000 ships. See if you sent some of them to save Prodigy and, not Prodigy, the Protostar and Voyager A. You would have had them around, just saying, like.
Yeah.
So, very smartly done and seamless as well as Grey Notes. Yep, more kudos to the writers. Respect. Chakotay goes to get Janeway. She'd retired, remember, technically. She had retired.
Right.
She was on her farm with Indiana without Chakotay, and I thought those two were supposed to be going to the farm together. So I'm really confused at this stage, Grey. I don't know
if they're just really good friends.
Really good friends. Air brackets. Yeah, very good. Basically, I'm like, yes, at this stage. I'm like Data. Yes, when he's got his emotion chip in Generations. get her back in the game. Get her back in the saddle. Chakotay breaks the bad news. What's happened? We're calling up. Thing is, right, she's not a reservist. She isn't. She's not Riker, Captain Riker, who's a reservist, right? She had retired, so she kind of went, nah, I'm good. Like, I'm retired. You can't make me come out of retirement. But, of course, she's going to do the right thing. She's going to come out of retirement and save the day. Admiral Dick, sorry, I'll always say that first name before Jellicoe. I really don't like him. Can you tell? Tells everyone that they need to scale back exploration. But Janeway objects. This is a very powerful, emotional moment for me, Gray, because I get why he said that. Like, you have to, if you can't defend your own borders at a minimum, everything else has to be secondary. But she makes the good case that, listen, without exploration, who are we? We're nothing. That's what our main goal has always been and will always be. And yes, that's just give us some more pew-pew from time to time. Please, that'd be nice.
Sure.
Janeway orders the kids to the shipyards, and I'm getting excited at this stage because what's coming up next? I don't bloody know. And we see one of the new Protostar class ships. Now, I had to pause this and kind of do this at the screen and kind of
look at the name
and look and go, what is that? USS Protostar? No, that's not a Protostar. No. It was the USS Prodigy. They'd actually named the ship Prodigy, which was cool. However, Gray, the original ship, I'm testing your knowledge here, the first ship of its kind is usually NX for experimental, usually. The first Protostar was not NX. Was it NX, though?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was NX Protostar.
I don't think they had a name of it. If I remember right, it was NX with a number.
No, they had to have a name. Even the original Enterprise.
I didn't know if the name was on it or not.
The original Enterprise was NX Enterprise.
It might have been Protostar. I'm pretty sure I saw NX on the hull.
Okay. I'll let it look at it. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes total sense. I was just double checking because you've got to don't do such a good job, Prodigy writers, and then forget that there's a way that starships are named.
Yeah, because this is the first actual official Protostar class ship.
Yes.
And apparently only one, like, for now anyway.
They're really bloody hard to make those things, because you're building a star for the power source, to be fair. And I don't want to see too many of them. It's just way OP and doesn't make sense to me a lot of the time, that starship. But basically, Grey Notes here, it's wonderful, looks beautiful. It looks exact same as the last Protostar, but I know what he means. I'm being facetious, taking the piss. It's just nice to see another Protostar, which is the most important thing. Janeway's basically called in a few favors. And the new Protostar...
All those admirals, they seem to have lots of favors all the time.
Which don't get into that position in life or nothing, my man.
That's right.
She calls in some favors, and that one ship is allowed to stay out of the fight, the defense. of Starfleet, and that's allowed to continue its exploration because it will double as a training ship, which it should do. The kids all get field promotions. So it wasn't the academy or anything or another admiral that gave them. It was, why did it take this long? They are given field promotions, which, can I remind everyone, isn't set in stone. I know it probably will be for the sake of the show. A field promotion isn't permanent until it's done officially by the relevant folk, signed off, because a field promotion is you usually get to keep your field promotion, is what I'm trying to say, but only if you usually
I
don't
think
make a
those are
cop
part
of
of the
it.
favors. She sped it along, or she
Yeah.
sped the process along.
It's like the kids have saved all our bacons twice now, at least. I think they're due a solid. It's probably why
Yeah,
Kirk never went to jail more times than he did, because they saved the galaxy. Just fair enough,
he did
so.
amazing things. Right, he did amazing things.
He did amazing
I
things.
just thought the whole thing when they got their pips was really exciting because they were like
We're so proud.
totally. They were dumbstruck as just like, oh my God, are you kidding? Or like, we get our pips?
I think
Of
you
course,
see it.
I think it was Jankum was the first one going like, it said, we gotta get our pips.
Yeah, they're like, oh wow, is that a pip? Like, they were so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. They thoroughly deserve it, Gray. They
Sure.
really, they're all full-blown ensigns now. They've just skipped bloody whole of Starfleet Academy. They've just skipped Academy because they got rumors, temporal rumors that Tilly was going to be taking them. So no, I'm all joking.
Yeah, that's why they left. They didn't want any part of her. No.
No, he really doesn't like
Different
Tilly.
timelines, different timeline.
Yeah, no, they deserve to skip. It just blows my mind that they've skipped the whole of Academy, which is the equivalent of a university course. It's like several years, and they've skipped the whole thing because they done real life shit. So field promotion, I love it. They thoroughly deserve it. Gray felt really proud for the kids getting their first pips. So did I. And let's say Prodigy will be an official training ship going forwards. But Admiral Janeway, Vice Admiral Janeway, is going back to the fight with Mars or whatever, I
Right.
don't know. The ship will be guided or supervised by Holo Janeway, right? Which she's been upgraded and improved. So,
Yeah,
super
I think
Janeway.
the doctor called her a
Command hologram,
version. I
like he
forget.
was at the end of Voyager, remember?
Yeah.
She's an all-in-one
I forget
now.
the exact name, but yeah, that's what he's calling
It's
it.
basically when the doc went, he had the command stuff given to him, basically, and he had the red suit on and stuff. I remember that was Workforce, I believe, parts one and two in season seven of Voyager, which I love because the doctor became a badass then. But then when he had to try and give up the power, he was not a fan of it at all. Jamie had to put him back in his place. So yeah, the kids will be guided by her. And Dal will not be captain. I thought he was literally about to sit on the chair, and then he went, "That's for you, captain," or I'm paraphrasing something like that. And he said, "I think, Gwen, you should be the captain. I thought it was once upon a time it should be me, but you're the best person for this job." And I didn't see that coming, Gray. You did see that coming. I did not. I think Dal has completed his story arc, grown up, matured, and is a fine ensign now because what a sacrifice, man. You saw that
I
coming,
think
really?
I only saw it like the last minute, just before it actually happened. I started thinking like, wow, I wonder if he'll give it up. And then he did. But he also mentioned that he said he felt more comfortable as being the number one, in that position. So he's basically found his, because he was basically resigned to the fact that he would like to be the best number one he could be, and he wasn't really concerned about taking command. And some people are like that. You could be the number one your entire career if you want to, if you're that good.
Riker, he
You
turned down
know.
so many captain promotions.
Yeah, because he was good where he was. He wanted to be where he was. I don't blame him. You're on the Enterprise in some ways, but eventually you do whatever you do.
Yeah.
I really like the uniforms though. Did you see the new uniforms? I thought they were pretty smart looking.
Yeah, no, they are pretty smart. I
They had the
think
different colors that denoted
yeah.
their areas, But yep. they didn't do it like the whole color. They had a kind of a bar, not a bar, but like a stripe like this, a big wide swath of the color, and then the rest of this, the uniform is more dark looking.
Yeah.
And stuff. I thought it looked good. It looked a little kind of like a cross between the Wrath of Khan type outfits, but with the color stripe in it.
I didn't dislike them. I'm a minimalist. I'm all about that. I don't really. That my favorite uniform in all of Star Trek is the TNG movie era uniforms,
yeah,
where the purple and black. Mm-hmm. They just look smart. I just don't, I like it. I like it to be kept minimal. I think there's too much going on with their uniforms. It's like, what's going on? And ziggy zaggy lines and different colours. And they're not bad. They're not bad, mate. So yeah, listen. That looks like. I mean, how does that work though? They're all ensigns, but there's going to be a captain.
It's a ship based hierarchy. So since they're on the ship, they all have their expertise. So they all are now. I don't know if you want to call it official or unofficial, but as far as the ship itself is concerned, she is the captain.
She is the captain of that ship, but she's not captain in rank, which we discussed before, didn't we?
And neither is the number one, but they need a number one, and neither is a science officer, but they need a science officer, et cetera, et cetera.
So one or two of them will actually be ensigns then, because they're in positions where they actually are ensigns.
Well, I guess theoretically, if you were to draw this way out into the future, they're essentially being field trained still, but out there. So technically, whatever things they accomplish out there in however much time, they would come back and probably be promoted again to, you know, get their second pip or whatever, you know,
hopefully.
Whatever the case may be.
Hopefully. How long are these training cruises for, do we think? Like, we know Discovery missions are 5 years, so we don't know how long.
Everything that I've ever seen in Trek has always been in exploration type missions, because that's kind of what they are, more or less. It's always in series of five, because they mentioned that Pike, when he's in Strange New Worlds right now, this is his second 5 year run.
Yeah, but I'm talking about training missions, not Discovery. I'm just curious.
I would think the regular, the real training missions are probably few and far between.
Yeah,
they do their thing on Earth or the Academy. They go out on a training mission. They do some more work. They go out on another training mission.
That'll be Academy. That's why you'll get some space stuff, Greg, because they will actually have to go places and do things.
Yeah, well, okay. Don't want to talk about Academy right now, but we'll see.
Great. What did you give this out of 10 and why?
I gave it a 10. I mean, for the little bit of nitpicks we gave here and there, I thought it was deserving, because it was the end of the second season, and I thought they really did a really good job. And on the whole, it definitely has become my favorite series, and it just edging out Strange New Worlds. I didn't want to make it sound like there's a huge gap there. There isn't. Right. But it edged out Strange New Worlds for me by a little bit, which says a lot, to be honest. And I just think they really were able to capture the essence of Star Trek and what it's about. You know, same as like the previous shows of Voyager and Deep Space and all the way back to TOS. They did the proper throwback nods in mostly respectful ways to what went before. They always were highly cognizant of the history and everything that goes with Trek. And you can't say that about some of the other newer Trek shows, because they weren't. Not especially Discovery. So for an animated Star Trek show, and the animation is really good, and it borders on live almost, because it's so good sometimes. To be able to be my favorite of the bunch tells you a lot right there. So I just hope, and I think they'd be stupid not to. Netflix will push for a third.
It's not up to Netflix. It's up to Paramount. They have to say yes. Netflix wants it. Paramount.
Anyway, they'll say yes. Netflix is going to go, then we'll do this and we'll spend our money. Is that cool? And they'll go like, yeah.
Yeah, because they don't have to spend any money on it. And after
they don't have
Netflix,
to do anything. They just collect a check.
After Netflix have shown it and had first dibs on it, then Paramount get it afterwards in their back catalog, so they don't lose.
It's like when you used to drive the cab drivers would own their cab, they'd rent the cabs out. You're renting your thing out, you know, and you guys, you know, That's do what true. You're gonna do. Just pay me the residual. And it's just like, I'll take the free check and come in. No problem.
Well, so. I gave it 10 out of 10 originally, but then I kind of surprised I did. That's the thing I done earlier on when I made a change. I actually, and listen, originally I gave it 10 out of 10 because I was like, wow, like 2 10 out of 10s in one season. That's never happened before. But no, I actually slightly marked it down to 9.5 out of 10, which is still bloody amazing. And it was just, there was a few nitpicks, but that one big nitpick pissed me off. Like, it's just such a lame ass, lazy writing. For Prodigy has such good writers, but you have to put in the same spiel of, oh, there's no ships nearby, which is a staple of Star Trek. We get that. That's a thing, right? But explain why it can't be done this time. They didn't even explain, well, they did explain why, but you know, when you're in mortal danger, then you go with the priority, which is saving the day there and then. And that really pissed me off. So like, the more sometimes when you read through the notes and the comments and discuss it with Grain, you go tweak the score ever so slightly. So listen, for me, 1 10 out of 10 and 2 9.5 out of 10 and one season is, I have to agree with Gray, for best series overall of modern Trek, new Trek, whatever you want to call it, Prodigy wins. The best singular season is still Picard's season 3 of modern new Trek for me. Singular, you can't beat that.
Yeah,
for
me. And right, and we're not comparing it to that because that's already over. We're talking about right now. No, I'm saying when I said that this edges out my. Yeah. What I like the best is because I'm not counting season 3 because that Picard's done.
Oh no, yeah, this is why I'm saying you can have a favorite series and a favorite season throughout Trek as well. You know, so like,
yeah, I mean, if we were gonna go just so and include shows that aren't on the air anymore, yeah, season 3 of Picard wins hands down. No ifs, ands, or buts about that.
I'm putting Picard into modern recent Trek. I'm just saying I'm lumping it together because, you know, there's a big break, wasn't there, after Enterprise, and then it all come back. So anything after Enterprise I consider as recent modern Trek. But anyway, listen, guys, that's been a really long one. And she did say that. Sorry, I had to say that. We are wrapping up there, though. It was going to be longer than usual because it was a two-parter. It was the season.
In the end, yeah.
And maybe the series finale, we don't know. If it's the series finale, it'd be a shame. But they ended it really, really well, which is great. Well,
they better hurry up because I don't feel like waiting 2 years for season 3. So let's get rolling here.
Don't jinx it. But anyway, we'll be back again in a little while, guys. We can take a short break and then come back. And there's always plenty to talk about Star Trek. So thank you very much for your patience, people. And for Mr. Gray, thank you for your patience. Until the next time, Gray, say goodbye to the beautiful people.
Long and prosper, everybody.
His internet was fine. He just decided to not say anything for 5 seconds.
No. What happened was I didn't hear you at all. Part of our little Discord issue going on here.
Oh, that? Really?
I heard nothing.
Okay,
good. I didn't hear anything you said the last couple of lines. That's why I waited for your lips to stop
right.
Moving.
Right. Excellent. There you go. First-hand experience of Discord being crap as usual. Right. Okay, people. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon. All the best. Bye-bye.